A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love.
We're not going anywhere. We're right here.
With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network, powered by KSL Sports. Thanks for being with us. Appreciate your business. Scott, first hour in the books now. Here we are. A little bit more to chat about when it comes to the Pac-12. We're going to get Yogi Roth from the Pac-12 Network on here in just a moment.
Can we go back to Tom Hackett?
Yeah. So Tom Hackett, if you're just joining us, went up to try out for the, to rookie minicamp. After he was drafted in the World Draft for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers,
yeah.
But the CFL went on strike. Like
I think he should cross the line. I think he should
be a scab.
Yeah, I just think it's such a great thing to have on your resume.
What resume are we talking about?
Just any resume.
The football resume.
Yes, like I was a two-time Ray Guy award winner,
All-Century Pac-12 team, not bad.
All-Century, and I, went up to the Canadian Football League, and I was a scab replacement player.
That's the third thing on the list.
Yeah. Who does that? Who
Nobody.
Gets that opportunity?
Nobody. That's cool. I mean,
In the NFL, there's like a lot of guys, right? I mean, there's, a lot of scab players. I know a scab player from the NFL. I mean, Randy White was a scab player.
He was?
Yeah. Did you not watch Invincible?
I guess I did. Are you talking about the Vince Papale?
Yeah.
Is that what that is? I know. I guess I didn't pay much attention to it.
Oh.
I don't know if being a scab, crossing the Canadian Football League's, work stoppage line, I don't know if many people will notice.
Well, it's not that they notice. It's just extremely unique.
I love the resume, too. Was a scab in the CFL.
What a terrible name, scab.
I know. It's
Isn't
bad.
That awful?
Well, that's why
it's terrible.
It's supposed to be a little bit derogatory. Come on. I watched scab baseball the summer of 1994 for a dollar. Ranger Stadium down in Arlington, we'd go watch baseball games for a dollar. It was amazing.
Was it worth it?
Oh, it was awesome.
See?
We couldn't tell the difference.
Scabs are people, too.
Joining us on the program right now, Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network. Yogi, thanks for joining us, man. We have tons of questions for you.
Okay, I'll do my best.
Let's fire
Thanks
away.
For having me.
So I've been watching these on the Pac-12 Network. These vignettes that you're doing going down all these schools. What was the funnest one to visit? I saw the one you did with Jed Fish, and I think the thing that I took out of it was, and I think we all feel this way, is like that Arizona program feels like it's on the rise and feels like that's a guy who owns that place now.
Yeah, well, I only got to 8, right? So I'll get the other 4 that I didn't get to visit in spring training camp. So I didn't get to see Utah, Stanford, Colorado and Washington before that I didn't get to visit.
You missed the best schools, Yogi.
I know. I tried, but it's tough.
Utah got so much attention last year. You can wait for a minute longer. It's
well, we need to keep giving them attention. And I'm sure we'll talk about that. But Arizona was a blast. I mean, I've been doing this almost 20 years now, calling games, and their spring game, I put it up near the top of the experiences of spring games, right? SC was always, I called that one probably almost a dozen times, I feel like. But the Arizona one is really fun under Jed Fish because he makes it an event, right? It's entertaining, right? There's a bounce house for families. There's water guns. There's just a million things that go on. And the lead up to it's really cool because most alums, I'd imagine, don't live in Tucson. And they doubled the amount of alums that came last year to this year. Everybody remembers what they did last year with Gronk and Teddy Bruschi. And then this year, they just continue to grow it. So it's really fun to do that. And I've known Jed for a long time. We both interviewed with the Seahawks in 2009 when Pete Carroll got the job. And remember sitting next to him at dinner and just becoming fast friends with him and his family. And so I've known his story forever. So he gives our team at the Pac-12 Networks and myself incredible access. So that's always enjoyable. But I can go up and down the list. Like, I went to Oregon, and it was awesome spending time with Dan Lanning. I don't know. It'd be hard for me to say which one. You know, visiting Pullman is always unique. I love going there because it reminds me of where I grew up, a tiny little town. So I've got a moment for everyone that I could probably rattle off. But ultimately, like, did your flights leave on time? Did I get a yoga class in? And did I get to watch some film? And was it competitive? Or really make it a great trip, man? So all of them had that.
So as you've kind of looked over the Pac-12 leading up to the season, what's your overall sense of the whole league? Is it improving? Is it good? Where do you think the Pac-12 is, maybe compared to in recent years?
It's elevated, I'll say that. I don't know how recent you want to go, right? 2019 was really fun. You know, it feels like forever ago, right? But with Oregon's run, and then they lose to ASU, but then Utah's run, and they lose to Oregon. Like, it was just fun. Like, it never felt like, you know, we're all unfortunately pining for the playoff because that's what ESPN did to college football, and it made it about that. So you felt like you were in the mix every week, is my point, that year. 2020 was funky. And this past season, it wasn't as the games were as competitive as I thought. Like, if you go around, like, the games were as close as they've been in years when you look at some of the just the numbers around conference games. I mean, they were so tight. I mean, I feel like there was a six-week stretch where I called a game that came down to the last two drives every weekend. So that was a blast. But overall, we didn't see a quarterback get drafted, right? Like, we didn't see the offensive firepower that we're used to seeing across the board, right? Drake London was a specimen in terms of what he did last year. But I don't think we have that. And this spring, I look across the board at QB, and I was looking at my whiteboard here with all the schedules. Jane DeLora, upgrade. Arizona State, they bring in Emory Jones, who I really like. I've known him for a while out of Florida. I think that's going to be a fun guy to track. Cal, Jack Plummer, he's a better passer than Chase Garbers. Stanford, Tanner McKee, might be the first quarterback drafted next year from the Pac-12. Colorado, I like what they have there. JT Shrupp's healthy to compete at that position. Cam Rising needs to be a household name prior to the Florida game, and I'll get to that point here in a minute. Oregon, Bo Nix, Ty Thompson, I love the competition. Chance Nolan for the Beavs. Caleb Williams, of course, at SC, the biggest get in the offseason for anybody in college football. UCLA DTR, a four-year starter. UW's got three capable players that I think could play well, and that team's undervalued. And Cameron Ward was the second-best portal pickup, I think, in all of college football at that position. So I just think that position, man, it got elevated. And this league is known for that, right, wrong, indifferent. And I'm excited. I'm excited for the firepower. And as I went through I just did this earlier this week, or late last week, I went through every team, and I kind of made, like, my own little draft. And I was like, who do I think are the best players in the league? Just for fun in my office. And I really like some of the firepower we have in this league. I think it's really exciting. And that's a big takeaway I think I had from getting to 8 of the 12.
How is it that, I mean, and we'll get to the Utah side of things in just a second here. But I look at this thing top to bottom, and you see the changes that happened at USC, obviously over the off season here. Have you seen that palpable difference? I know people were pretty high on what was going on at spring already down at SC, and so per your view, how far have they come along here? Are we really not going to know until football games are actually played?
You know, man, I don't think we're going to know. I still believe this, and Chris Peterson is one of the, you know, the most impressive humans I've ever been around. And the day he got the job at UW, I flew up there and I said, how long does it take to install a culture? And he goes, 18 months without blinking an eye. And I talked to him a couple weeks ago, and we talked about that again. And same thing, I think that is the deal at SC. You know, Lincoln Riley hasn't been there for 8 months, let alone 18. And he's got a lot of new faces, right? He might be over 50% of the rosters turned over by the time the season starts with a team that he didn't really know, right? Albeit a couple of the transfers from Oklahoma that have come in, and of course he recruited and coached last year. So I just think that's going to be a challenge. Now, I think their schedule sets up for them to be able to make some noise in terms of where they have to go in the majority of their games. But Fresno State's not easy. Going to Stanford week two is not easy. Going to Oregon State's not easy, right? You going to Utah, we know that. But I just think the back half of this team's schedule, when they get into late October, November at Arizona, Cal, Colorado, UCLA, Notre Dame, I think that's where they're going to pick up steam. And I don't think it's their year. I think the hype and all the things are fun to talk about, and I love it. But I think it's going to take a little time for it to gel, to your point. I think they're going to score a lot of points, but I don't think they'll be perfect. I think this league is going to be a little too challenging for them in year one to win it. Utah's the team that I would pick and the team I've been talking about all offseason. I think they have proven it. I think it's their turn to kind of have a little bit of a run here. But it's not going to take Lincoln Riley long. I mean, make no mistake about it. They are thriving in recruiting. They are killing it in the portal game. And I think SC is going to be, you know, back to what SC fans hope, which is really competing for Pac-12 titles and much more than that. And I think they'll get there under Lincoln Riley.
All right, let's talk about the elephant in the room, Utah. And you mentioned about Cam Rising becoming a household name. Please extrapolate on that.
Well, I'll say this, and I've been saying it on every national show I've gone on this offseason, is that if I'm going to guess the game against Florida on CBS. I don't know that right now. But if whoever's calling that game after the game is saying, "Wow, Cam Rising, so impressed by him," I'm gonna lose my mind, because and I have no problems, and I will be that loud about it on social media and Pac-12 networks, wherever I need to be, because this guy was a 5-star recruit coming out of high school. This is not 3-star Sam Darnold. This is not, you know, 3-star insert quarterback name that we've seen in the past, Tyler Huntley. This is not 3-star Marcus Mariota. This is the dude who's offered everywhere, who went to Texas, who came back to the footprint because he wanted to share a shot to play and whatever reasons he made. And he led a team the minute he got the reins to, in my life, the most historic season in Power 5 football for Utah. I was there on the bad end of the Utah beating Pitt season, so I don't want to reference that too much because I was miserable that night at the Fiesta Bowl. But in my time, at least as a broadcaster in almost 20 years, the last year was the most magical season I think Utah's had. And I get the Sugar Bowl year and all the stuff that they've done, but when you add in all the storylines and everything that went on, man, it was just power. And this is the catalyst to that, among other players, but he's the catalyst of it. And he may get too much praise, but I don't think he's getting enough right now around the country. I think he's a Heisman candidate, and I think he needs to be talked about like that. And I think it's on people like you and myself and those of us that know this league to scream from the rooftops to make sure that whoever's calling those games and whoever's talking about it, it could be whatever mouth from the South you want, but you better know Cam Rising. This dude is elite. He needs to be talked about that based on previous performances, also based on his recruiting and his standing and rankings coming out of high school. I mean, this is a dude in that regard and should be given that type of praise. And if he's not, then whoever's supposed to be doing their job covering the country isn't doing it. Because Utah's a real threat, and I'm gonna be sad if after that game we're talking about him a Heisman candidate. We need to be talking about it coming into the season. He needs to be in the pregame show. He needs to be in the open. All those things when they play the Gators, Cam Rising name need to be all over it.
That's when the school sends out the cookie shaped like the Heisman Trophy. It's got Cam Rising's name on it. That's when you get those. I always love those campaigns that schools do, but I'm always like,
well, he's got such a unique look. I mean, you could just the whole mustache and the,
looks
and
like
the
a
long
pirate.
Hair.
Just I mean, admit, I mean, he looks like just, a pirate.
There's a lot you can do. I agree with it.
There's some mystique there to the guy, and there's something to be said about, just like you said, Yogi just showing up and saying, "Hey, I got the team week 3 in the second half, and we took this thing to the Pac-12 championship and won it and then got to the Rose Bowl." It's pretty insane. So are they for you a legitimate playoff contender that some people are saying and that other people are just kind of dismissing?
Yeah, I don't know how you can't say it, you know. I don't know who's not saying it, but if you are, like, to me, that's like, all right, well, they're not paying attention. Like, and I get Bama and Ohio State, like, they're 1 and 2 in the room. And I get Clemson's history and pedigree. I understand that. And I understand Georgia, right? Like, I get all of that. But Utah needs to be in that dialogue based on what they did, right? And based on, it's not like we're playing D3 football out west. Like, it's Power 5 football, right? This is big-time football. 4 guys taken in the first round this past draft. And I think Utah right now, just like UW, just like Stanford, just like Oregon, they all kind of had their turn after SC had that magical decade run. I think it's Utah's turn. I really do. So when I look at the schedule, look, it's not easy going to Florida in the opener with a revamped roster. You're going to get the best shot from Billy Napier's program. But Utah it's not going to be easy, but they should be positioned well to go make some noise in that game. And then as I look at their schedule, right, like I'm excited for a lot of their games, but I look at like Oregon State at home, and then they go to UCLA, challenging, but they should be undefeated when USC comes to town. And then if they win that game, then it's bye week time. And then they go to Wazoo, play Arizona, Stanford home. They go to Oregon for a powerhouse tilt. And then they go to Colorado. Like, who knows what happens in some of those games? And we all know that no one's gone undefeated in the history of Pac-12 conference play since the expanded of the Pac-12. So I'm not saying that they're going to go undefeated because the numbers would say that they're not. But I think they'll find themselves back in Las Vegas with that raucous crowd that they always bring and in position to take what Kyle Whittingham often says is the next step, just winning games like the Rose Bowl and, you know, expecting that to be the standard of that program.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Speaking of Cam Rising, in a world where guys transfer at the drop of a dime, I'm not the guy, I'm out the door, and he lost that starting job to Charlie Brewer and stuck around, and he really owned being at Utah from day one. For whatever reason, he was just like, I'm in, I'm here, I'm committed to this. And when he took over, it was a different team. And there's something special about him. There's something different about him. And he's just been a remarkable player. And watching him in the spring, it just feels like he's kind of even elevated his game even more and refined himself a little bit. And so it'll be fun to watch. I'm curious, who from the north do you think is the team to beat up there?
It's a great question. Make no mistake about it. Oregon is loaded. Okay, like this team was positioned to take a run this year at everything. And I remember talking to Mario Cristobal when he was the head coach there on their bye week, and he was rumored for a bunch of jobs at the time. SC, of course, was one of them. Miami hadn't been open yet. They were still kind of, the previous coach's program. And he goes, why would I go anyway? Because this team is positioned now. Like, we've had three or four straight top 10 recruiting classes. Like, we're going to have another top 10 pick and Noah Sewell next year. Like, we're loaded. And I'm sitting there like, yeah, there you are. And anyway, fast forward to now, he's clearly not there, but Dan Lanning is. And I love sitting down next to him. I just had a podcast episode on The It Factory come out, which is a podcast I host with him, where he dove into, like, what drives him as a coach and the culture that, he's trying to instill there. And I just think that he's going to be a guy that's going to be in this league for a while. I don't think he's going to be like we've seen at that school with coaches kind of coming in for a couple years and bolting or getting let go. Like, I think Dan Lanning has put together a killer staff, and they have a ton of talent. So I lean that way. But I'll tell you, man, Cal might have the best front seven collectively in the North. I mean, Brett Johnson's the best interior defensive lineman in the league. He didn't play last year because he got in an accident the day before their spring showcase. This dude, and you talk to any coach, they'd say the same thing. They wouldn't flinch, in my opinion, when you ask him about, he was the best guy inside. Oh, yeah, that guy from Cal. And the linebacking core, Nate Ricina and Femi Oladejo, they remind you of guys that played at Utah last year. I mean, they can ride like that. So their front seven's real. The most explosive offense Justin Wilcox has had, and I like the QB. What their O-line like, it's a question. Right? They just picked up a guy in the portal, see if they add another one. But I look at them and Oregon State. Oregon State is, I mean, remember, they were in the conversation for the North up until the last weekend of the season, right? Like, up until their rivalry game. Like, this team, again, there's not a lot of weaknesses. They've got a freshman back, much like the freshman back that you guys all saw in your spring game in Jalen Glover. Mm-hmm. They got the same thing in Damian Martinez. This dude looks like a senior already, and he's a beast. I mean, thick, big back. Like, I like this talent. Luke Musgrave might, he's a top two tight end in this league, right, next to Brant Keithy. So I'm excited for them. They're really solid everywhere, and they play really solid football. Both of those teams are pretty much mistake-free a lot of times when you watch them. There's not a lot of games where they're in double-digit penalties and turning it over. So those are probably the three teams that I would say – I'd lean towards. But, man, when I study UW, roster's better than you think. They just had such a down year. Their roster's better than you think. And then I say the same thing about Stanford. They're not a three-win team to me. I just can't buy that when they have – might have the best passer in the league in Tanner McKee, at least NFL comp-wise. Scouts love them. Their receiving core, they're all 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", including their tight end Ben Jurosik. They're loaded there. They've all been banged up. E.J. Smith, I think, is better than the backs who departed, right? The two that transferred, Austin Jones and Nathaniel Pete. And their whole line, what no one talks about is California, you guys know this, we, especially Stanford and Northern California, the COVID restrictions were really impactful. Right? So much so that last year, Stanford, for instance, they were still meeting via Zoom. They were not meeting in their meeting room. Right? Utah didn't really miss a beat when it came to like training and off-season training. When we go back a couple years, well, the offensive line for David Shaw, which was a vaunted class two classes ago, they never really got to have a full offseason. This is their first full offseason in their college careers. And I say that because nobody's buying Stanford. Everybody's talking about Hopseed and David Shaw. I'm not. Now, their schedule's brutal, but I would not be shocked if they beat SC. I would not be shocked if they beat UW. And I wouldn't be shocked if they beat Oregon and Oregon State. Right? Like, if they have Davis Mills and their receiver, who had false positives 2 years ago, they might have won that game. They beat Oregon last year. Right, wrong, indifferent, penalties, whatever. They still beat them. They took them to the tilt. I just don't buy them as a three-win team. So it's hard for me to pick. And I think Washington State's got as electric of a quarterback as there is in our league. You're going to love Cam Ward. So, yeah, man, not trying to be that pump-up guy, but from what I saw among those teams in spring, it's really hard for me to choose.
Well, we ended up further away from what we could have. We're further away from knowing anything at this point now. After asking that question,
it's like everyone.
No, I know, because like I will convince myself on all these quarterbacks on all these teams to some degree. So it's like I can do it with everybody. And certainly Yogi is one of those great spokespeople for the Pac-12 and does his homework. So Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network. Thanks for being on the program here with us. And when you come to Salt Lake, we're going to have to do a yoga class, all three of us together. Me and Scott need it. Come on.
Let's go. Hey, I love talking to you guys. I really appreciate the time. And love to come on anytime you need me.
All right. When it gets closer to the season, we'll absolutely do it. So there you go. Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network. We're going to come back. We got more to go here on the program.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.